Topic today is, per the front page, is the Jew lighting the oven, Bishi Yisrael cooking the Jewish way. That's just a smoke screen for the topic. Okay. didn't want to make it too controversial. So, the Gemara in Avodah Zorah says that the Mishnah says in Avodah Zorah, in the second parak, that one of the things which Chazal limited was from non-Jews was the shlokas, things which they cooked. So shlokas are a problem. The Gemara originally tries to find a source in the pasuk that there's a problem, which means if you have totally kosher items, all the items are kosher. If it's cooked by a non-Jew, it's going to be problematic. That was the starting point of the. That's the Mishnah says. I'm wondering where does that come from? Why is that so? So originally, the Gemara tries to find a pasuk, and on page 2, the Gemara, after attempting a few different attempts, the Gemara says, top of page number 2. El Mirabbanan, the Gemara says it's Mirabbanan, Rekros Matabahama. We do not have a valid source which would really create this halacha in the Pasuk that it'd be prohibited to eat kosher food cooked by a non-Jew. But rather it's a Tekana Rabbanan. It's a Tekana Rabbanan. So Rashi says, why did Chazal institute this Tekana? So Rashi, underlined the first Rashi in the page, Shalayhe Yisrael Rogel Etzloy B'maychol B'mishta. If we be allowed to eat the cooking of a non-Jew, so they'll get together regularly, they'll have meals together, etc., because he's a good cook. He can cook kosher food. Why not? Well, one time, eventually it's going to happen. He's going to give us something which is also to eat. So not necessarily this time is going to be a problem of non-kosher food, but eventually, if we're going to be eating together easily, eventually there'll be concern of non-kosher food. So Chazal said, stay away from eating his food. So Rashi says. Tosis has a different reason. Elamir Rabbanon, Rekros Matta Ba'alma. So Tosis quotes Rashi, the Tosis on the top of the page. Pierce Rashi, the Rabbanon, Gozer Mishum, Dechayshi Shema Yachaleno, Devorim Temeyim. Tosis says that quotes Rashi, that the reason is because of this concern of potentially something non-kosher will be fed. Tosis says, I would explain the reason is because Chazal wanted to maintain a distance between the Jew and the non-Jew, because although if they become too friendly, there's a concern of intermarriage.
Morning, man.
And that's the main. That's the which in the flow of the Mishnah, there are other elements in the Mishnah which the Gemara says clearly were instituted because of the concern of intermarriage. So I would say this applies that also. And Rashi himself in the Mishnah says the reason is because of the concern of potentially of intermarriage. So it seems to be a steer in Rashi. Rashi in the Mishnah says because of chasnus, and the Rashi over here says because of the concern of feeding him the things which are not kosher.
Rabbi, the Lashon in Tosfos is mashma that he places more weight by chasnus than he does the Baruch Tamei.
Correct. So it would seem more to say that's the reason. And Rashi himself says it in the Mishnah.
And then that's the Rambam Lishitasa.
Okay, now, let's see in the Gemara, a little more in the Gemara. Amar Rishon Bar Yerav Yitzchak Amar Rav. So Rishon Bar Yitzchak says, in the name of Rav, Kol Nechol K'moshe Huchai, Ein Ra Mishum Bishuli Ovid Kechavim. Anything which can be eaten raw doesn't have a halacha of Bishulakim. Besura Mas Nehochi, that's in the city of Sura, in the yeshiva of Sura, they had the phrase of Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak Amar Rav saying that statement. But Pupadisa Masnu Hachi, however, in the city of Pupadisa, they have a different version of what he said. Amar Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak Amar Rav, Kol Sheinu Nechol Al Shulchan Malachim, L'Lafis Boy Esapas, Ein Bar Mishum Bishulei Avdei Kechav. Something which will not be eaten on the king's table as an accompaniment to the bread, literally, does not have a halacha of bishulakim. So we're limiting this halacha, we're qualifying and saying it doesn't apply to things which can be eaten raw. Yeah, just check in the office that the copy should be ready.
Okay.
Yeah, I just. So if it can be eaten raw, even if I'm eating it cooked, it's not a problem with bishulakum. If a goy cooks, again, if it's kosher food, and it can be eaten raw, the fact that the goy cooks it does not create an issur bishulakum. And the second statement is only items which would be erl al shulchan malachim. So that's going to need clarification. What is this point of being erl al shulchan malachim be be served on the king's table. Furthermore, the Gemara says the lafas by a pas, it's eaten on the king's table as a lefes for pas. Now, lefes for pas, you see from the Gemara's different places in Shas, doesn't necessarily mean you ate it directly with bread. But it means anything which is eaten as part of the main meal. So part of the main meal is going to be any meat, fish, vegetables, which you eat as part of your main meal, is considered lafas beis hapas. Furthermore, things which are eaten as appetizers are also considered part of the lafas beis hapas. Anything which in halacha, I'm going to tell you, that you eat it during a meal, you do not need a bracha rishon. The hamotzi covers it. The more says in brachas, it's because it's called that lafas beis hapas. So I don't make a bracha on meat when I eat in the meal, even though I don't eat it with the bread, because it's considered part of the. It's always considered secondary to the bread. So again, anything which would be eaten in a meal would be covered with the bracha of a moitzi, meets the criteria of a lafas beis hapas. So appetizers and the main course of a meal would be considered lafas beis hapas. Desserts are a question which the Rishonim discuss. What's the status of desserts? Because desserts do get their own bracha. Says this Gemara. Now, so my binah. The Gemara says, if you're telling me the first opinion, the issue is raw versus something which is going to be eaten cooked. The second issue, the second version is because where it's served. So Morris said, give me its practical difference between the two of them. Morris said, Kibbenayo, Dogim Ketanim, Va'ardi, V'daisa. So Dogim Ketanim, small fish. They're not eaten raw, but they wouldn't serve that on the king's table. Daisa is like a farina type of a food. Something made out of wheat. It's a hot cereal. So again, that's something which is, you can't eat it raw. You don't eat wheat raw. But they don't serve it on Shulchan Malach. Ardi is some type of a mushroom. Exactly what it is, I'm not sure. Okay. The Tosfos points out over here, we passing like both versions of the Gemara, which means that's a kula. That only says Bishalakim only applies to A, items which can be eaten, which cannot be eaten raw, and B, are Allah Shulchan Malachim. If either of those are not true, it can be eaten raw, even though it's eaten on the king's table, all right? Or it can be only can be eaten cooked, but it's not eaten on the king's table. It's not bishalakum. So bishalakum is limited. One of the issues we're going to try and talk about today is the second criteria of Eilat Shulchan Malachim. What exactly does that mean? Now, we have to understand the concept. There are some people understand that to mean it means the royal table when he's having a fancy dinner. Now the challenge which we have in that, if that's the definition, if Chazal were concerned about intermarriage, Chazal were concerned about people fraternizing which between the two people, so say, listen, once a year when you make a fancy dinner you can't eat with him, but the rest of you can eat with him, what do we accomplish? Right? How would that solve the problem? Right? If they never get together for the inaugural ball, we don't eat together. The state dinners, you know. For everything else, we eat together. So how do we solve our problem of staying away? So what is that definition? So let's see what the Rambam says on it. This is not the only definition. The Rambam seems has an interesting definition. So he brought the halacha of Mishalakum already a little bit earlier, but in halacha Tetzvav he says the following. This halacha only applies to things which can be eaten on the king's table. They go on the king's table to eat with bread. The king does not eat it. For example, that would be a certain type of vegetable which the goyim, the non-Jew cooked. They cannot be eaten raw. So even though these things cannot be eaten raw, but since they're not going to be eaten on the king's table, they are mutter. So the Rambam, why? Shigra gzeira mishum chasnus. The main concern over here was Chazal were worried about intermarriage. Shlayazam no ha'akum etzloi besuta. The goy will invite you. So now, he didn't say that the king invites people on it. It's something that the king has for his personal meal I'd be comfortable inviting people over by me. But he didn't say the king invites people on that food. So I don't need to know what the president serves for his state dinner. I knew what the president has for supper. Right? If you hold the president counts like a king for this halacha. Right? I need to know what does the queen have for supper privately. Well, she's not going to eat just any type of food. She'll eat something kosher. Well, I would invite my friend on such a food. Now, what she serves by the royal wedding, that's not the criteria which we're talking about. That's above and beyond what she has in her personal meal. But what someone should be arla al shulchan malachim, and then I would be comfortable inviting my friends over. That's how the Rambam puts it down. So the people say the criteria is what they serve at a state dinner. The Rambam does not seem to say that.
Very societal dependent. If you have a formal society, the typical social gathering is to sit around eating potato chips.
Again, but you know, the king, we would like to believe, I don't know about the president, I don't know, we would like to believe that the king doesn't eat, doesn't have potato chips together with the pas. I mean,
but the Rambam is talking not about the king.
He's saying whatever, he's using the criteria of Lechel, he's saying that the king eats pas that we would invite people over with.
It's private meal.
Right, but the fact that he has potato chips for a snack, that's not going to be the problem. That's not, you know, because I'll ask for the meal. The Rambam in the page is number 4. So the Rambam in Halacha test in Yud Zayin. The Rambam says, V'chein kloya shel akum, roasted kernels, that was their equivalent to their potato chips, basically. That was the sunflower seeds. You roast the kernels and you eat them, right? Mutardim, that's not a problem. There's no gzeir on them. You don't invite the person over for a chashivas. We're going to have a meal together, and, you know, a chashivas to that on potato chips. And that's the thing the Rambam means in that. Okay, so that's how the Rambam likes it.
Original heter for the supply, but it's not nishtanim mehar.
So in halacha, there's a big question: does that apply halacha l'maisa? Most the Shulchan Aruch does not mention it as a criteria halacha l'maisa. The Shach questions whether it's the gay halacha l'maisa because more wants to know from a pasuk, and more eventually falls off of the pasuk. So it seems to be that then that's not a necessary criteria. Okay, so that's the definition that seems to be from the Rambam. Now I want to do the following. In this packet, if you had
what's
the
best and
what? I'm not sure. What's your question? Okay, in this packet, I'll tell you what the packet's about. Page 23. So one of the questions is, which most of the pack is going to deal with, is the issue of canned tuna. So is there a problem with is there a requirement of Bishul Yisrael on canned tuna? Is one question. It can't be eaten raw. There is actually Rabbi Ganak who's the head of the OU Kashrut Division, Rabbi Ganak has an article about it. He says maybe nowadays with sushi that would allow it to be considered eaten raw, nechal kamashuchai, which would be an interesting question. There's different species of tuna, and some species of tuna which are used for sushi. They're not used; you don't find in cans. But the most expensive type of tuna, bluefin, it's mostly because nowadays people use it for sushi. It can be found; you can get canned bluefin tuna. Generally, you don't. It's not worth it nowadays for them to put it into cans because they make much more money on the sushi on it. I read one piece of information in the Wikipedia where they said that 50 years ago, bluefin sold at a penny a pound. It was used for cat food. Now it sells over $100 a pound for sushi. So you should have invested. So, but one of the questions is now in the canned tuna. So there really are three questions in canned tuna. One is there's bishul akum issue. That's one question. Second question is we get it in the can. We don't see fins and scales. So how do we know that's kosher? It's kosher. How do we know what we're getting is really kosher meat, kosher fish? It's the second question. And the third question is, are all types of tuna kosher? The question being, one of the types of tuna which is used is called skipjack. Skipjack has very, very minimal scales. I'm not going to get involved in the third question. The people who write the articles about it have made it, address that issue. I'm going to talk about the first question, which is the Bishul Yisrael question. And the second question is, what level of, if we have time, we'll talk about also what level of oversight do we need to be able to rely on the fact that this is kosher tuna that I'm getting. Do I have to, is enough what's called a Mashiach, which is Nicholas, but you would say Mashiach goes in there once in a while, is that enough? Is it enough to say that they told you it's kosher? Because that, wait a minute, Bumblebee told me that this is albacore, I don't need any hechsher on it. Or do I require a Mashiach there to check every single fish? And all three opinions, by the way, are out there in halacha. There's three different opinions in that. So I'm not sure we're going to have enough time to get to that part, so I'll focus on the Bishul Yisrael part if we have time, but the packet has both. You want to take it home and look at it. This is just a slight sampling from the articles which are out there on this issue. There's a lot of articles written on this issue in Rav Hirschel Schechter, and has a tshuva, he's the OU's position, which is matter. Rebelsky has a tshuva, which he asters it. It's also the head of OU, but he asters it. He also gives him a Shkech Tamini. And he has a problem with the Mishnah. So also, that's interesting. Rabbi Ganak has a tshuva where he's matter it. Rabbi Bleich has a tshuva where he asks it. Rabbi Willick has a tshuva where he's matter it. And, you know, each one, of course, the tshuva is 15, 20 pages long. You know, Rabbi Tendler has a tshuva where he asks it. So it's like, I think why you had this, you know, argument over there, you know, about it.
For different reasons? What, some for Hashemites and some for
Mishalakim? They discuss both.
Who's Rabbi Ganak? Rabbi Ganak.
The head of the OU, Kashrut Division. Okay, but so, and each one I have a copy. If you want, I have copies of the articles. You can look at them.
What does Rabbi Rosen say?
Rosen is in the game of Dover. He belongs to the Star K. Star K requires Mashkiach Tamidi and Bishop
Yisrael. Who's Rabbi Rosen?
Okay. So this is page number 23 is an article from Rabbi Ganak, Shlita. We talked about the question of the halacha of Oyla Shulchan Malachim. So he presents the question over here. It's underlined. We actually stop it back. Doris din zed the oil al shulchan malachim. We need to understand this halacha. Im akavana he she michael royal sudas melech b'chol tifaratoy when he has a royal dinner. We begin a sudas shlomo b'shaitel. The more he uses the language shlomo melech's meal when he was at his heyday. You know, he had a major meal over there every time. It has all of the trappings of royalty. Is that the definition of Elashulchamalachim? The point is, the Chazal were using this to say, it can't be a regular, simple food. What was the point which Chazal were after? So he brings a story over here that Rav Shimon Schwab, Zatzal, asked the Chazon Ish, regards to sardines. Sardines was a big topic. Sardines didn't have any hechsher, but there's sardines in there. You can actually see the fins and scales. The question of sardines was more the oils. The kasher's element was the oils more than the sardines. But then there was a Bishul Yisrael question. It wasn't cooked by Jews. So is there a problem of Bishul Yisrael on the sardines? So this was a big argument, etc. So Rav Schwab Zatzal asked Rav Chazon Ish about it. And he said it's also. He says there were many Rosh Hashivas in Europe who ate it beheter. And they said because it's not Allah Shulchan Malachim. I mean, you don't serve sardines by the Queen's banquet. They're not serving sardines. So the Chazon Ish said it's called Allah Shulchan Malachim because the Malchus Anglia ochel sardinim baruchas berker shula. The Queen eats sardines for breakfast. Okay, I don't know how he knew that, but that's what he said. Okay, all right. The Chazon Ish said so. Mustama was true.
How does this relate to the dogging Ketanim
in the Gemara? No clear connection because we don't. On that dogging Ketanim in the Gemara, there are many say it's referring to a type of fish which normally grows large, and when you eat it, catch it when it's young, and you eat it, it's not the way you normally eat it. Whereas the sardines, this is the way they come, and that's it. So he says that he feels that the machlokes in the Chazon Ish, which he held was a problem, and these other Poiskim, which held it was mutter, was the definition of Allah Shulchan Malachim. What does Allah Shulchan Malachim mean? Does it mean for a fancy meal for the king? The meat is regular meal. How do you define that? And that seems to be the argument. And he says over here at the end that he heard from Rabbi Yosher Ber Soloveitchik Zatzal from YU that he says shlita because at that point in time he was that anything which comes in cans by definition is not olah shulchan malacha. Because if you define olah shulchan malacha, it means that the king would serve it for a fancy meal, right? I can't tell you that the queen, they won't serve the queen for lunch, take out a can of tuna and make a nice fancy tuna salad and serve it to her. I can't tell you. They will not serve it by a fancy dinner for the queen, right? But that they won't use canned tuna for breakfast for her, I don't know. I don't think that that's true. But he says, but if you define that the definition is for a fancy meal, yes, that's true. So according to the Chazon Ish, the definition would be something which we would, like Rama says, you'd be mazamer chaver alav. So if I would use it for a Shabbos meal, I'd use it for a Shabbat brachas, if I'd use it for a chasna, now, we all go to chasnas, believe me, they use canned goods. You know, your caterer is not cooking everything fresh. That's considered what nice enough for a chasna.
Rabbi, what's the makor that nachal shulchan malachim is something other than just this is what a king eats as part of his or her, you know,
personal meal.
I mean, it doesn't say, you know,
lahazmin chaveiro, right?
Yeah, it doesn't say lahazmin chaveiro. It's not mafurish that it's talking about a, you know, some sort of festive meal or an official meal. It's just this is partially what malachim eat at the table.
Right. So it is a discussion. There is a few tshuvas about it. In other words, would we argue? If I would find out that the queen eats Weetabix for breakfast, which she does, right?
What are Weetabix? What are
Weetabix? Very plain cereal.
Very plain. Weetabix now become a problem in Bishalaku. Because the queen eats it for breakfast. I mean, they actually advertise that the queen eats it for breakfast, right? Right? So we know that for sure because it says so. So would that be considered now, or do we say it's something which they eat for a very, very plain, simple meal, even though the queen eats it, right? But that's not called Olah Shulchan Malachim. The idea of Shulchan Malachim, the table of the kings, has some criteria.
But then it's tali in the food, not who's eating it then, to some extent.
It was
a pashut of food, no matter who's eating it, can't be elevated beyond a certain point.
Right, so Rabbi Falk from Gateshead has a tshuva where he quotes a tshuva from Reb Tolushkin. Tolushkin has a tshuva. The name of the tshuva is Rice Krispies, All Bran, Weetabix. That's the name of the tshuva. Across the top. Rise, Reish Yud Zion, Rice Krispies. About this issue of Bishalakim on Rice. And they said it's not a problem. You know, you can't make Rice Krispies
into a
chashuv dish. You know, that's not Bishalakim. You know, even if you tell me that, again, I don't know if the president counts for Olah Shulchan Malachim, but even if you tell me the president has Rice Krispies for breakfast or cornflakes for breakfast, that's not going to make it into a Bishalakim problem. So you're drawing a criteria somewhere. So where do you draw it? That's where the question's going to be. Okay. So that's he presents as the two possibilities on that issue. That's one area that's one area of question when you come to Bishalakum is it Olah Shulchan Malachim? So one of the arguments is that canned items are not Olah Shulchan Malachim. Therefore, tuna fish is not a problem because it's not Olah Shulchan Malachim. The reading of the way the Rambam presents, and the Shulchan Aruch does not quote the Rambam. He doesn't really give any criticism. It's Olah Shulchan Malachim. It's all he says. No definition at all what Olah Shulchan Malachim means. Neither the Shach nor the Taz give any more definition. So they're leaving us in the dark for a definition of that. And this is where we have this question afterwards, what it means. Yes?
Maybe Rambam is the only one who had a real idea of Olah Shulchan Malachim. I mean, he did that.
Once Rambam gave me a definition, you would expect some of the later poskim to discuss it.
I mean, there was certainly, you know, around the time of the Rishon and the Achron, even at the time of the Achron, I mean, there was certainly Malachim.
And there was, you know, there was rabbis who were busy having interaction with the Malachim all the time, and the princes, etc.
But the Rambam did every day.
Yeah.
Most of the others didn't.
Yeah, okay. And Rishol Katzin Elabogin was he was the main agent Potocki, Graf Potocki. Graf Potocki owned half of Poland. He was the main agent. He spoke to him every single day. I mean,
not a king.
He was worth more money than most kings. You know, Trump. Right, you know, something like that. Okay, Trump, see, it's not just money, it's a certain chashiva, the way a person holds himself, you know, but you know, these people, believe me, once they got money, that they, you know, they the nouveau riche, you know. Now, the next question is, yes?
So, if the food is fit for the king's table, but then becomes degraded either by putting it into a can or it gets a couple days old, does it become kosher?
No. No, once it's a problem, it doesn't change.
So we were saying sardines would be served at the queen's table if they were fresh, but not when they're from a can? Is that what it came up?
No, if the process how you make sardines is different, that the way they make sardines, and the way we'll talk about how you make tuna in a second, yeah, is they cook it in the can.
In the can.
Right. So you never had a time, when it was raw,
it's cooked twice.
Okay, we'll get to it. Good. Now, next potential question is, it's cooked with steam.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's cooked with steam. Is cooking with steam considered cooking? The guy with the initial bishalakam. So we have one question. We have three possibilities. Is it considered raw nowadays? Edible raw? We have a question is, what's the definition of oil shulchan malachim? And we have a question of, is this called cooking? So in page number 5, the Birkei Yosef quotes from the Marit Tzahalon, one of the late, the early Akhrenim, see, his question over here was, he wants to present a heter. I'm sorry, no, this is the heter palta. I don't want to do that yet. Page number six. So he discusses over here. There's a clear sif in Shulchan Aruch in the halachas of Bishlach and the Siman Kuf Yud Gimel. I think it's sif Yud Gimel. It says that it doesn't apply to smoked foods. Foods which are just smoked. You know, you can smoke a food and make it edible through smoking. There's no way to bishalakam on smoked foods. So the question is, do we compare steaming to smoking? That's the question. So this person who asked the question they were grappling with was, why isn't sugar a problem bishalakam? Why isn't sugar a problem bishalakam? So one of the answers is, you know, is the liquid which comes out of the sugar cane edible raw? So if you go down to the places where they grow sugar cane, I mean, I grew up in there, in Barbados, and it was you went to the marketplace and you'd buy a piece of sugarcane and you'd suck it. It was edible raw. Okay, but they were assuming that it wasn't. They were actually making sugar out of beets, which is not edible raw. So why isn't it a problem? You go to the company which makes sugar, why is it from Bishalak? And that was the question that they were dealing with. Why isn't sugar Bishalak? So he says the way they would make it through a process of, the company would do a steaming process to cook it. They use steam to cook it. It's more economical, etc. So, well, that's like the din of Ma'ushin. This is what this person suggests. In the underlined over here, it's in the left column, it's underlined with the third line of underlinings. Rei Ma'ushin l'chasha tol z'or, l'yilokin ala b'shabas b'asa b'chol mishum bishul. So he wants to compare the two. He says, well, but we do find that they're not exactly the same, because smoking is not considered an act of bishul, of cooking, in regards to Shabbos. And the person made the fire before Shabbos, and he takes, he has his hickory chips burning, and he puts a piece of fish above the hickory chips, and it comes smoked. That's not bishul deraisa. It's not the heat which is doing it, it's the intensity of the smell which is doing it. Basa b'cholov, a person would take milk and meat and smoke it, he wouldn't be over this at basa b'cholov. He's not cooking. But a person cooks with hevel, that's a fair shigamora, that I will hevel, hayoyd say, loigora me'amechem shekibel tolos or the chayov. The Mor says, tolos or is chayov. I don't have to have direct fire. If I have something which is heated by the fire and I cook with that, I'm also called cooking. So the gabi Shabbos, it is called cooking. The gabi basa b'cholov, it is called cooking. So why should I say over here it's not called cooking? So he doesn't feel that that's a valid point.
I mean, the other point by steam is much, much higher than...
Much higher, right. So his point is that, you know, can you say that argument? Then he deals with the second question, that we deal with factory cooked goods is different. But that's the first point. And that continues on to page 7, where the Darkei Tshuva brings this issue, do we consider steaming different than cooking? And he says that the Shema Aryeh brought that somebody suggested that. That was on page number 6. And he felt it was wrong. But he says over here in the left column that the Sefer Zer Zahav brings one of the Rishonim that the Issa Hefter seems to say that that is true.
Was true?
That steaming is different than cooking. It doesn't have the Issa of Bishul Akum.
It does?
Does not. That's what he says. Now, I'm not going to go through all the pages over here, but page number 8, number 9, and number 10. Let's just put in the wrong order. Okay.
Do we be worried about sugar now?
You'll have to ask your rabbi. So, in the... the order is wrong. Yeah, a lot of these, the order is wrong over here. Okay. I apologize about the order. There's Yerushalmi, which they quoted, the later other person, but there's Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi clearly ties the din of Bishul Akum to the din of Bishul on Shabbos and the din of Bishul Mevasim B'Cholim. And therefore, based on that, the heter of steaming seems to be a very weak heter, because that's clear that by Shabbos and by Basar B'Cholim, it would be considered cooking. Furthermore, which by the sardines, not by the tuna, the sardines, the way they do it actually is they put liquid in the can. They don't cook it with steaming. They cook it in a can with liquid inside. And it boils in the liquid. How do they get the heat to the can is through steaming. So Rav Ozer writes in the Tshuva, that's not called steaming, that's called cooking. Tuna, what actually happens is that they cook it twice. First they cook it once, actually they put it in racks into and they steam it. Direct steam. Then after they put into cans, they put into a large retort, and they cook it again and there's liquid in there. But they're already steamed the first time. It's already edible after the first time. So the second.
I think it's roasted. I mean, I've seen it done. It's roasted the first time. It's cooked. It's really roasted. It's not steamed. They come out. The skin is crispy. Whatever, it peels off, and then it's processed by hand. And then the second is that they put in this retort with the liquid. But.
Right. So I know at least the way.
Whatever.
I didn't see it, but you know they said that they raised the question. The first cooking is a steaming. Now I have to tell you that the Rabbi Ganak and Rabbi Herschel Schachter both rely on steaming as a heter. On the Bishul Yisrael issue, there's a third heter which is so the Rav Avadia has a tshuva where he says the steaming issue, the Yerushalmi remains with a question what his status is. So Bishul Akum is answered the Rabbanon, Suffolk the Rabbanon the Kula. The Minchas Yitzchak Dayan Weiss itself said I'm not going to rely on steaming alone, but there's another question: is our factory is different? Why? Because the whole issue is intermarriage. So I go to my neighbor next door, you know, we hang out together, you know. I don't see the guy who cooks the food. I never see the guy who doesn't know me. I don't know him. We're never going to see each other. Is that going to the Isser Bishul Akum or not? See, is there a heter called factories? Now, the Gemara had such a concept. It was called a baker. It's called palter. And the Gemara presents this concept called pas palter. But that, in page number 5 is where the Birka Yosef quoted this heter from the Maritz Salon. That he said there's a heter of palter on this item. His palter was the baker. So the baker's not cooking for personal, and he's not inviting me in for the food. It's a business thing. I don't know him necessarily. He's guy standing, guy cooking, there's a baker in the back, Mr., you know, whatever his name is, you know, and the Italian guy in the back making the pizzas, you know. I don't see the guy. I don't know. We have no shackle one to the other. He says, so he suggests the same thing, that there's a heter like that by Bishul Akum. So the Birka Yosef responds that you go through all of the Gemaras and all of the Yerushalmi, which says that they didn't want to be matzah palter by bread. There's a dinner, there's an Isra pas Akum was also, but they were matzah palter by bread because since bread is chayin nefesh, they were matzah. It's explicit Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi is saying explicitly it only is a heter by bread, not by anything else. So Dayan Weiss says, well, I'll combine the steaming in the factory to say it's enough to be makel, the combination of the two things together. So he's matter, there's not a problem with Bishul Yisrael, by combining those two points. Each one in itself is a weak point, maybe you can combine the two. It's one of those, argument with Hani Yeshiva is 0 plus 0, 0, or is a half plus a half a whole? All right, that's the argument you have to figure that one out. Is steaming, which is not clear that it's mutter, and factors are not clear that it's mutter together. A heter, it's two unreliable heterim. It's not a reliable heter. So Dain Weiss is Mesamechad at Lamaisa. Ravad is Mesamechad on steaming alone. And the Birkei Yosef and others say that that's not a heter b'chlal. The heter of the steaming is not a heter. They held it. The Shema Aryeh says, not the Birkei Yosef, says he holds that it's b'chlal not a heter. It's a fairish. Why don't you watch it be Osir? And there are other poskim. Page number 8 is Rehalpern. Rehalpern wrote a sefer. There's a Mechon Madi Tetelagi Lebait Bahalacha in Eretz Israel. So the modern cooking issues, he has a sefer on the kitchen in modern days, and he felt that based on Yerushalmi, etc., should be a problem. So it was a temporary Rav Shlomo Zalman, very chashuv.
What?
So in the Shulchan Aruch calls it a problem. So it's not a clear heter to rely on steaming.
What should be a problem?
But again, if you look at the tshuva from Rishon Shechter and the Tshuva from Ganek, they do rely on steaming as one possible heter. They rely on factories as another possible heter, and they bring the etc.
Are there any more recent tshuvas now that sushi's become contract?
Rabbi Ganek mentions it, the sushi issue. Now, the issue with the sushi is it basically bluefin is the one which is used for sushi, and some of the other ones which are used are not getting into your cans of tuna. So how far you define your species, and that seems to be a discussion also. Do you say that this species is never eaten? This type of tuna is not eaten raw. This type of tuna is. So how do you define that? That's an argument out there. What to do with that? So that is the Bishul Yisrael part of the conversation. I think everybody covered everything on that.
You're going to say a word about the level of oversight, Rabbi?
Let me just give you a word on that. So Rav Hirschl Schechter in his tshuva, he starts with a that's what I'm looking for. He starts with an apology. As people raise the question, the halacha that chacham shaharid, you can't, once chacham gave a psak, you can't argue with it. What's the problem? That Rav Henkin and Rav Moshe both held that the oversight you need full oversight for tuna. For any type of fish that's coming in a can, you must have a Rav Moshe has a tshuva. It's here on page 16. Rav Moshe says that the Mashiach has to see every single fish. Yeah. He sees every single fish. And Rav Henkin held like that also. So who am I to come along after Rav Henkin? And Rav Moshe said, it's osir, and I'm telling you that's mutter. Like, what is that about? He says, I'm not doing that. He says, what I'm doing is that B'shaita or Soloveitchik disagreed with both of them. And he at that point in time was in charge of the. He told all you to be matter the cans, you know, with the Mashiach going in and out, and he Rav Aaron Zatzel, Rav Aaron Cutler, Mishai to argue with them, and he held bumblebee tuna was mutter without any hashkacha at all. Rav Aaron Zatzel held it was mutter, because it's albacore is a kosher fish, and it's albacore, right? So Rav Shechter said, I want to explain their position. I'm not coming to argue with the Moshe and the Rav Henkin. I'm telling you why this is what they held, and this is my Pesach, so I'm going with my Pesach, right? So that the large part of the tshuva is, you know, the first two pages are doing matzah, why he has the right to do this, but he says at the end, I'm just trying to explain Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Kotler's position as opposed to Rav Moshe and Rav Henkin. So that's a heavyweight machlokes out there. I don't want to stick my head between the two of them, that's for sure. So the arguments of the Isser, there's can you rely on a roiv? Roiv is it's a majority of situations, it's not a problem. The fish which is coming in is kosher fish. It's even though it's called the miyat, which is not motzi, it's not a common miyat at all, which you have non-kosher fish coming in with them. So simply for a very simple reason, because the if I'm a fisherman and I'm delivering to this company, or the company is the fish goes out, the ship goes out and catches fish. Every fish that we're not going to use is a waste of my space. Right? Now, if you picture that some of these fish, you know, a bluefin can weigh in at 1,000 pounds. Right? So that takes space. So I'd rather have a bluefin in there than have a non-kosher, than have a dolphin in there. It's a waste of my space. Right? So I'm not going to keep non-kosher fish. I'm going to throw it back. So as the catch comes in, the normal derech of the fisher, the ship, is to check. What do we got over here? And throw everything else back. Nothing to do with kashrus. It's good business. So there's a compelling reason why the majority is, and they always get kosher fish coming into the factories, is because simply, why would we do anything else? So that's a compelling reason. So that's like a roif. And that's what the Shechter argues, that hasn't been like a roif.
There's also the, now, because of the environmental movement, there's another incentive for them. They put it on their label now.
Right. Now, Ramosha and Rav Henkin both say that the roif doesn't work over here. In other words, they address it. We agree that it's considered a roif. He feels a roif doesn't work over here. Why? You have to look at I'm not going to get involved in the elements of the tshuva. There seems to be a halacha, which the Rambam paskins, and it seems to be paskin the halacha, that there's a requirement to know that this item is a kosher item. Now, that definition of what level requirement is sufficient, Sir Hedekin says, but specifically a roif is not sufficient. So Rav Shechter, in his response, he wants to create five levels of roif. And he brings from a chassam sofer, the rule is we follow the roif by isurim. Different levels of roif. There's a level of a roif which is like, 51%. There's a level of a roif which is what's called mir hamotzui. Mir hamotzui is 10%. So it's 85%, but it's a miut. But it's a common miut. That is what's called mir shen hamotzui. It's less than 10%. By isurim, we rely on that. Mir shen hamotzui, we can ignore by isurim, normally. But by sakana, we don't rely on roif. And but the chassam sofer writes in the tshuva, but 1 out of 1,000, we rely on roif such a roif even by sakana. So he wants to suggest that that halacha, you can't rely on roif to tell you what type of species it is, what type of, whether it's kosher or non-kosher, that Rav Henkin was talking about, doesn't apply to such a roif of 1 out of 1,000. And he's spoken to the mashkichim, which are there, time and time again, it's 1 out of 1,000, at least, at best, where you're getting a non-kosher food. So Reb Bleich and his tshuva responds that we don't find that halacha such a gradation. That chassam sofer is almost specifically by case of sakana. We have no such gradation in halacha. And if once we agree that you can't rely on a roiv to tell you what type of fish it is, it's not rely. You can't do that. So that's to me the arguments. Will roiv work? The argument really is the factories are geared towards making such an item, and they only want that item. And there's compelling reasons why they only want that item. Is that sufficient? One of the sources is Hedel and a Muggin of Rum. Page 17 is a Muggin of Rum. And the Muggin of Rum, the Shulchan Aruch has a fascinating halacha. I can buy a talus, this is Simenchof, an Orachayim Simenchof, where I can buy a talus, the Shulchan Aruch says in Simen, a Sif Aleph, L'kev talus mitzuyetzes mi Yisrael. I buy a talus with sitzes in it. Oy mitzhagar akam for a non-Jewish middleman. He bought it from a good Jew. The locha is the kosher. So I'm buying my talis from Joe, the salesman, right? And, Joe Palerno, whatever it is, this Italian guy, business is business, right? He's selling talasim with sitzes in it. No problem. He tells me he came from, that rabbi over there. I trust him. You trust him, He tells you he came from the rabbi. Mehechem tasi. Right? It's a gemara in Menachos. So what's the understanding of this din? So the Magen Rama here grapples with this. Why does this work? Normally, it's not Nemun. Not only that, Bezman Chazal, they were sitzes included tchelis, and there's a gemara in Avodah Zorah that you can't buy tchelis from a goy. If a goy delivers your tchelis to you, if I have a tchelis business and I have my non-Jewish worker that's a delivery boy, I have to seal it the same way you seal kosher food. You can't have your non-Jewish worker deliver the food unless it's sealed. The more so, you have to have a seal on your tchelis. Otherwise, you say, if I'm the goy, come on, take the tchelis, replace it with some other type of dye, and go sell it on the black market. And the more it says the menachos, I'm going to rely on them, tell me this is a kosher tchelis, including zitzes, with tchelis. So what's that about? That's the Morgan Rama's question. So he says, the goy tells me, So he says, so what's the reason? So the Beis says, afilu tager b'shar scharis neman. Even though it's not his main business, he's believed, the imotze bedoy b'davar echad, shuv lo yamineu b'davar achad. So it's simply, it's not worth it for the goy to do this and undermine his reliability. Because when he gets caught, it's going to blow his business. But then he says, the Magrum says, so if the goy sells you kosher meat and tells you it's kosher meat, you're allowed to eat it? That's not true. Well, what happened? What's the difference? Look down. Otumi shor liktus baser me'akum hatager kashar meshu kasher shindloy maram nafshe. So what does this have to? So I skipped the line. He says the mashma hosim the davka b'davar the ikar kapedib umnase. It applies to his business. It's relevant to his business. So if I get caught in my own business doing such a thing, so I'm never going to be able to sell again. So if I care about it, but if I don't care, you care. No, I don't mind fooling you. But if I care, then it's a problem, right? So that's what he sees. That's what the Mugram seems to read. But then he says it's not the Heter. He says the Heter is because, go ahead, don't make Talesin. So you know that he probably didn't make it himself. He probably got it from a Jew. So is the main point the idea of Kepedah B'Um Nosoi, and that's what the Chalkos Yaakov has a tshuva, the Chalkos Yaakov's son, it's printed in the Chalkos Yaakov, has a tshuva to be matter based on, since it's relevant to him, albacor, because of his factory, etc. He doesn't want to put anything else in there for other reasons. So there are bluefin or yellowfin or whatever it is he's putting in over there. Since it's relevant to him for his own business purposes, that's the Magen Avraham, he's Nehemah. And the response back, the Reb Leach says, no, the end of the day, the equal point of the Magen Avraham is Dein Derech Akum Lasa Sitzes with Begad. Says that Echonami, to buy Sitzes from him, you can't. Because he spins things. To buy a towel with Sitzes in it, you could, because he doesn't spend his time putting Sitzes into the lace. There's one Meshuggah Nagoy, since it's a good business. Okay, yeah, you know, there were Goyim in Europe, there's a mice in Europe that they found, there was Goyim in Europe who became Seifer. You know, business is business, you know. So they had Sivatar, which are written by Goy. Okay, but we're not going to be cautious for that, the halacha, because that's not normal. So is there a Meshuggah Nagoy who decides, but business makes sense, you know, puts it in the bag. But to spin wool, like what's the big spritz? So that you can't rely on him. So how do you define that? So that's the argument of how to understand this Magen Avraham. Really, that's what it boils down to. What does it have to this Magen Avraham? And you can look on these various different pages if you want to go weiter. There is one of the Gemara which is based on, there is a Gemara which says there are certain fish that we're not worried about non-kosher because the Uman would sell it, he wouldn't let mix in non-kosher fish. So in that response, that specific case actually was a scenario where the non-kosher fish would be damaging to the kosher fish. So that's why you wouldn't mix it in. But in a case where it wouldn't be damaging, what's the difference? You know, I don't care, right? So that's the Gemara Nevadah. It's called Uman Chilak. Chilak. It's a fish called Ches Yod Lamed Kuf. Chilak.
In terms of their concern about being caught in business, so could that possibly relate to the issue of the Zmanah with the dolphins?
So Rav Moshe has a tshuva. Rav Moshe says, even though there's different kenosis, etc., that's not a heter. Interesting, Rav Ganak says, Rav Moshe, you're the one who's matter cholav Yisrael, because you rely on the government. What's the difference? Right? I understand. So Rav Ganak and his tshuva at the end, he says, I don't understand Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe says that behead, we do not rely, we cannot rely on government oversight for this. There's a law you have to know. Even though you rely on it by there. So Rav Leach says answer why he thinks that they're different. You know that's
high nefesh.
No. He gets involved in, you know, the scenarios, how it works. One are different. One is the discussion of I have to know that this is the species. One is a question that he bring other things in. Halacha requires they have a direct idea of this. Over there, it's enough to have a idea based on other things. They say he wants to differentiate. But in Russian, it's explicit. You look at the end of this piece over here on page 16.
It's explicit with
motion. He says, the fact that it's in the contract doesn't mean anything. The fact that they say it's even though the government's, you know, those that he says that that's not enough. Dog, I'm certainly mamish. And once you do that, you have to seal it with two seals. Like that's where Moshe's at on that. I just want to tell you, interesting. Do it.